Very good morning to everyone, and a special welcome to the law students from Chicago Kent who are here to observe the court today. We wish you well in your studies and in your entry into our profession. The first case on the docket this morning is number 02-1662, the United States against Michael Berkeley et al. Mr. Patterson.
Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel. May it please the court. My name is Chaka Patterson, and I represent the defendant, Valjean Hillman, in this case, defendant appellant. Your Honors, this case before the court is here for you to determine the primary question of whether UMG was charged by the government as a victim in the indictment. We contend that UMG was not a victim charged by the government in this indictment. And as a result, a manifest miscarriage of justice occurred here because Mr. Hillman was convicted on uncharged conduct.
Now, is it your position that the specific intent requirement of 1343 requires the government to prove not only specific intent to devise a scheme or artifice to defraud, but also each victim it was specifically intended?
It is, Your Honor. Our position is that in this case, referring to cases such as Lechman, Pettigo, Ramirez, and Willoughby, that where the government charges specific victims in the indictment, those victims become essential elements of the crime charge that the government must prove beyond a reasonable doubt.
Well, but it's one thing to say the government has to prove these victims. Quite another thing to say the specific intent requirement goes that far. And I guess one problem I have with your argument is that I don't see the government's proof bringing in some completely different bank or something, number one, and I do see, I'm looking at the indictment and the appendix, significant references to UMG funding that strike me that they do tie the government's proof into UMG.
Your Honor, the government's proof went to UMG at trial, but they did not charge UMG as a specific victim in this indictment.
But what I'm looking at, I mean, trying to read the indictment as a whole, which I'm sure you agree we need to do, just for example, the 4553 South Ellis property, the government charges that Mr. Hillman applied through UMG funding. It's specifically named. It was further part of the scheme, paragraph 17, that represented and caused to be represented to the lender that he was doing all this stuff. And then later on, in paragraph 21, it says UMG funding transferred its interest in the mortgage loan, which implies to me that it was the lender, maybe for a brief time. Maybe it was a bridge lender. Maybe it was, you know, whatever. But it transferred its interest in the mortgage loan to Plaza Home Mortgage Bank. Now, I'm not going to give this indictment A pluses, and I think you wouldn't either, but it strikes me that that does put UMG squarely in the indictment as a victim.
It does not, Your Honor, and here's why. The way the government drafted the indictment, and I direct the court's attention to the very first paragraph, which is found at Supplemental Appendix 1, page 1 in our Supplemental Appendix, the government created two categories here, lenders and brokers. That's paragraph 1. In paragraph 2, the government specifically says the defendants knowingly devised and intended to devise a scheme and artifice to defraud, and then it names Plaza Home, Texas Commerce Bank, Fidelity, private mortgage lenders, including Long Beach, Cassie,
right,
Residential Funding, and Ryland. So it is our position that, and then it says collectively, the lenders. What the government did here was they made the specific victims in this indictment the lenders and not the brokers.
But what if they proved, as paragraph 21 suggests, that UMG did, in other words, that it wasn't just a single function company, that it loaned for a while and then it's part of its brokerage activity, it sold the loan. Lenders sell loans all the time. And if your reading of this statute is that any time somebody sells paper, the government can't prove a scheme to defraud, it strikes me pretty much read it out of the book.
It's our position, Your Honor, that when the government charged the lenders as the specific victims in the indictment, it was those specific victims that it had to prove at trial.
But did it prove that anybody else, it did have a lot of proof about those victims. I thought the only point you were making was that the specific intent wasn't linked up to, for instance, Plaza. But it's not like they came in and said, oh, it was really Bank One for the 4553 South Ellis property. What was the surprise to Mr. Hillman from this proof?
Well, the surprise to Mr. Hillman, Your Honor, is that if you look at specifically at paragraph 1F of the indictment, which can be found in Supplemental Appendix page 2, the indictment specifically excludes UMG from the realm of victims. 1F defines UMG solely as a broker.
So why does that exclude it? All it does, it's a definitional paragraph. And again, reading this as a whole, I don't see the government saying in the indictment UMG was not a victim.
Well, it does, Your Honor. Again, if you look at paragraph 2, it specifically says the defendants knowingly devised and intended to devise a scheme and artifice to defraud Plaza Home, Texas Commerce, and so on.
Right. What if the indictment had said this? What if the indictment in paragraph 2 had said the defendants herein knowingly devised and intended to devise a scheme to defraud whatever financial institutions they could catch, period?
That would be a different case, Your Honor. And Lechman and Willoughby both speak directly to that situation. Specifically in Lechman, the court acknowledges that the government can draft an indictment that is broad in the sense that it just tracks the language of the statute. But when the government names specific victims in the indictment, the government then has undertaken the additional burden of proving that those victims were defrauded at trial.
But didn't they prove that? The only thing they didn't prove was that Mr. Hillman knew it was going to be Plaza Home and Texas Commerce Bank. They proved that these companies lost money from the scheme, didn't they?
They did, Your Honor. But what they did not prove was Mr. Hillman's specific intent to defraud.
Right, which is what gets back to my first question. Why does the specific intent requirement go to the victims as long as they had a specific intent to devise the scheme to defraud and the government properly does prove the victims that it named? The jury finds that beyond a reasonable doubt.
Well, Your Honor, it's our position that the statute requires a specific intent to defraud. And the government did not prove that Mr. Hillman had. Now, if the government, in using your example, if the government had just said a specific intent to defraud whatever financial institutions happened to have been defrauded, fine. But
why didn't it prove a specific intent to defraud, even though it might have been talking about UMG as the first stop along the road? Mr. Hillman never intended for he probably didn't care where the money eventually came from. He had a scheme to defraud, which is what the statute calls for. Somebody.
Right. Well, Your Honor, again, just looking at the language of the indictment, the government put Mr. Hillman on notice that he devised and intended to devise a scheme and artifice to defraud these particular institutions.
And it was proven that those institutions were defrauded. It's just that they were not in the crosshairs of his vision at that point, right?
And we believe that that's legally significant, Your Honor, that is what the case turns on. Because, again, it says intended to devise a scheme and artifice to defraud these institutions. If the government proved anything at trial, all they proved was that he intended to devise a scheme and artifice to defraud UMG, if they proved anything at all. But they certainly did not prove that Mr. Hillman had an intent to devise a scheme and artifice to defraud the specific lenders named in paragraph 2. So it's our position then that if one looking at the indictment named the specific lenders, the indictment explicitly excluded UMG from the list of victims. Also, the party stipulated UMG into the broker category, not in the lender category, and only
the
lender.
If I recall, the language of the stipulation varies in an interesting way. That it says that the lenders function solely as lenders, whereas it says, I guess, the first part, at all relevant times, the following lenders were in the business of providing loans. Then the paragraph about UMG doesn't use that term, at all relevant times. It just says it was a broker. And I'm wondering about the dual capacity, how far we take this stipulation.
Well, I think the stipulation says, it is further stipulated that the following were corporations in the business of brokering mortgage loans to mortgage lenders. It tracks the language of the indictment.
Right.
And I see I'm in my rebuttal time, Your Honor, but if I may answer your question. the stipulation specifically names UMG and other institutions as brokers, not as lenders. And in this situation where the indictment explicitly names specific lenders and names those lenders as the victims and excludes the brokers out of the victim category, the government has failed to prove that that the lenders at issue had, that Mr. Hillman had the specific intent to defraud those lenders at issue. And as the court in Lechman and Willoughby explicitly acknowledged, the government has complete control over the indicting process. They draft the indictment. If the government had wanted UMG to be a victim, it could have named UMG as a victim. If the government had wanted to take into account the dual function that it appears UMG may have played, as Judge Wood has noted, the government could have defined UMG in that way, but it didn't. And it had all the cards, it had all the control over the indictment. It did not do that. It named two categories, lenders, brokers, named the lenders as the victims, brokers as not. It explicitly defined UMG solely as a broker. And as a result, the jury convicted Mr. Hillman on uncharged conduct, because we know from the government's brief that they don't even challenge our contention that they failed to put on any evidence as to a scheme to defraud Plaza Home, Capstee, and the other folks listed in the indictment. Nowhere in their brief do they say, well, even if UMG is not a victim in this indictment, we have still put on sufficient evidence as to Mr. Hillman's intent to defraud Plaza Home, Capstee, and so on. On that basis, a miscarriage of justice has occurred here, in that the evidence on an essential element of the crime was so tenuous as to make this conviction shocking, and we ask this court to reverse this conviction. Thank you. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Patterson. We'll hear now from Mrs. Kickstein Foley.
Good morning, Your Honor. Donna Foley on behalf of Michael Berkeley. Your Honors, I raised a reasonable doubt issue in this matter. I'm prepared to rest on my brief unless the court has any questions.
I guess not. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll hear now from Mr. Zaremba.
May it please the court. My name is Tom Zaremba. I represent the United States in this appeal. Your Honor, speaking to Mr. Hillman's first argument, the scheme that's set out in the indictment matches the economic reality of these transactions, and it did not surprise Mr. Hillman at trial that this was an issue that he didn't even preserve in the district court. The proof at trial matches the proof in the indictment, and that proof is that Mr. Hillman and his co-defendants wanted money, cash, in the form of mortgage loan proceeds.
But, you know, paragraph 2, as Mr. Patterson points out, doesn't say what you just said. It says the scheme was to defraud particular banks and mortgage companies. As he points out, you write the indictments. Why aren't you stuck with what you put on paper?
Well, two things. First, that, as we argued, UMG is, in fact, a private mortgage lender. It certainly fits comfortably within the definition of a private mortgage lender, and it matches, again, the proof at trial.
But didn't you waive that in the stipulation? You called them a broker in contradistinction to lenders.
Not exclusively. They acted, and the proof showed, that they funded these loans for a very short period of time before they passed them on to a financial institution. And it didn't matter to Mr. Hillman or his co-defendants which particular financial institution it was. The mortgage broker was their point of contact for the financial institution and the conduit through which the money came from the financial institutions. The government showed that the wire fraud affected financial institutions, specifically Plaza Home in Count 1 and Capstead in Count 2. Or count three, I'm sorry.
What about the jury instructions? The jury instructions were quite broad, too, weren't they? They said, you know, he had to prove a financial institution was defrauded or something very generic like that.
Yes, that's what they said. They said that they had to show that a financial institution was defrauded here. The government's first argument on this is that Mr. Hillman's counsel at the district court was well aware of the instruction that Judge Norgel intended to give. He initially objected to it. He indicated that he was going to submit an alternative instruction. On the day that the instruction was to be given, however, he specifically acquiesced in the instruction that the district court gave, did not object, did not submit an alternative. Mr. Hillman has waived his right to have this court review that issue. And even if he did not waive his right in this issue, again, the indictment in count one and in count three set out the reality of the transaction, which is that the mortgage brokers were the point of contact for the financial institutions.
But I guess the concern with the jury instructions was one of constructively broadening the indictment. The indictment said particular institutions, the jury instruction comes in broadly.
Well, the proof at trial was that Plaza Home had been defrauded. And on count one, and the proof at trial was that Capstead had been defrauded in count three. There was not specific proof that Mr. Hillman was aware of those institutions because those institutions didn't inherit the defrauding loans until several days after the loans had been originally funded by UMG. He was no more aware of them than he was in Long Beach in count four of the indictment. But it's the government's position that that is sufficient because what's at issue here is a scheme to defraud by wire that affected financial institution. And there's no limiting language in the indictment, unlike enlightenment where there's language such as to wit or namely or that sort of limiting language that can be pointed to in the indictment. Certainly Mr. Hillman hasn't pointed to that. And there's nothing... and there's no reason to impose that requirement on the government in this case. We rely, as the court is aware, on the First Circuit case of Brandon, which is a very, we believe, an analogous case in this instance.
Well, I guess the trouble is, it's easy enough for me to see how the proof at trial tied into this, but if you undertook in the indictment to prove things that you didn't technically need to prove, then you have to prove these additional points as well. And I guess that's the whole issue that's before us, isn't it? It's not whether you could have drafted an indictment to meet these facts under 1343. We've got to deal with the one you really did draft. And I wonder to what extent you're relying on the fact that we're here on plain error review.
Well, certainly that's a large part of the government's argument. Mr. Hillman could not possibly have been surprised about what was at issue here. The proof at trial involved UMG and the defrauding of UMG, which, as we say, is a private mortgage lender. There was also representatives from many of the financial institutions who came in and told the jury what they relied on, how they relied on the mortgage brokers, and how this business worked. Mr. Hillman could not possibly, as I say, have been surprised by the proof at trial, and it matches, in our view, what's contained in the indictment. It is not a miscarriage of justice to affirm the jury's verdict in this case. And as for the arguments as to Mr. Hillman's argument on count four, the insufficiency of the evidence, and Mr. Berkeley, the government will rely on its brief on those points. The government requests that the convictions and sentences of both defendants Hillman and Berkeley be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Dromoff. And Mr. Patterson, I believe you had kept some time for rebuttal, had you not? You have a minute left.
In the 1 minute I have remaining, let me be brief then and just say first that pointing to the Brandon case, the Brandon case is your hypothetical, Judge Wood. The Brandon case simply charged a scheme to defraud banks, period. And that's what the government proved in Brandon. Here, the government indicted a scheme to defraud these particular institutions, and where it did so, it undertook the additional burden of proving those specific institutions. Now, the government has told you that it didn't matter to Mr. Hillman or the other people where they got the money. Who cared? But it must have mattered, because the government drafted an indictment that named specific victims.
Was there a restitution order in this case?
Yes, there was, Your Honor. $276,000 to Capstead.
That would be one of the reasons they'd be mentioning particular victims, even if Mr. Hillman didn't need to know about them and may not have known about them.
Right, but they've also named the Plaza Home, which was the institution in count one. And I think, the issue here is that UMG was, the government had complete control over the drafting of the indictment and chose to draft it in this way. And if they had wanted to take into account economic reality, as they are now arguing here, they could have put that in the complaint. They could have drafted a complaint that reflected economic reality, and they failed to do so. And instead, what they've done is taken an after-the-fact justification as to why they only put on evidence as to UMG and no evidence as to Plaza Home and Capstead. Even here, in this oral argument, the government still has not stated any evidence that they put on as to the specific institutions named in the indictment. I see my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson.